Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Wednesday, May 17th. We're back with you. Tori's out today, and I'm joined by Cameron Kelly. Hi, welcome to the show, Cameron.
Hi, good morning.
Sure, you've been here a couple times before.
I have, yes.
And
I'm
we
so
love
happy
having
to be back.
You here. You're definitely a friend of the show.
Oh, okay.
So you're invited back. You didn't get a chance to go to Ireland this week, did you?
No, Tori, yeah. You know, I didn't get the invite. I guess I wasn't her plus one to the wedding.
So yeah. Sucks. So she had to go. And yeah, but what do you think about those long distance weddings? I mean, you know, they make you spend a lot of money.
I know.
Right?
So her
and
husband,
how do you say no, right?
I don't know. Right. I don't know. I guess you can't. Because her husband, you were telling me, is the best man.
He's the best man. So
I guess they don't really have a choice.
Right?
But they don't. I actually haven't been to a lot of weddings. I've only been to one wedding in my whole
really?
Life. Which is, it's such a funny thing. I have somehow escaped weddings.
Dodged them,
yeah,
right?
I've been invited to certain weddings, and then for whatever reason, I don't end up going for schedule things. So I don't know, but they don't pay for your airfare.
No, they don't pay anything. You have to get there.
So you have to get there, yeah.
Right, yeah. And people do that like in Cancun and stuff, and it's like, yeah, it's nice, but what if someone can't afford it, you know?
Right.
They can't leave work.
Right,
It's a long trip to Ireland. So, but I'm sure she'll make the best of it. You're already there, you know, you might as well.
Might as well.
Yourself,
I mean,
right?
In Ireland, how fun.
Right.
How fun.
It's pretty. So, yeah, I've never been there, and we were talking about it with Tori the other day. You know, they film like a lot of movies there and stuff
yeah,
like that. You know?
Yeah, they do, because it's so beautiful.
I know. So, well, what can you do, you know? You don't have any Irish background or anything in you?
I do, actually. I'm, as you can tell just by looking, well, you guys can't because it's the radio, but you can, Sam. I'm very pale. Was the joke. But no, I do have Irish in me, but I've never been. I've never been. And actually, my family and I have thought about vacationing there. That's sort of been a destination that we've been hoping to go to because it's so gorgeous and, you know, we're all from there or at some point.
Right, exactly.
So it'd be fun to go, but no, I've never been.
Yeah. Have you ever done like a DNA thing like that 23andMe?
Yes!
Really?
That is so funny that you ask. I actually just very, very recently did.
Recently,
yeah.
So what did you find out?
Because my mom bought me and the whole family a 23andMe pack, and I really recommend it to anyone who's looking to find out about your ancestry. And beyond ancestry, it's also helpful to know what's in your genetic code in terms of potential
disease
illness.
And things
yeah,
like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just what you might be prone to based on what your ancestors have had, and so what could be in your system, which is super helpful. But yeah, so I was 99% Eastern European.
Wow.
And,
so there you are. So yeah. not a lot of mixture there,
not a
right?
ton. No, not a lot of diversity in me. But I was 0.1 African. Sub-Saharan African.
Oh, wow. How interesting,
and I felt
right?
really cool about that.
Yeah, wow.
It's like, wow.
But it's 1%. It's just a little bit,
but
right?
it's still part of my history.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, that is great. I have that fun fact.
I know. So, yeah, my brother had it done, and he found out some interesting things, so I think I'm going to do it, too.
You should.
And find out some of it. Because it's interesting, right?
To see
where
it's so interesting.
Where you came
from. And it charts back. You know, where, which, like through the decades or through the, you know, lifetimes, where right. your ancestors were living and sort of how it happened. So right. you can kind of piece together your history a little bit as best you can.
I know. It's really cool. And I found that I have some Italian in me. I'm
oh,
like,
really?
What? Yeah. How did that come about? But my father is from Greece.
That.
So
oh, yeah.
they're next door to each other,
yeah.
so it's not that surprising. But
maybe there was some collusion.
Yeah, exactly. You know, people cross the border,
yeah.
they find pretty women, they're like, they move.
And, you know, we've got Sam because of it.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, yeah, so I don't know, but that's interesting. So let's review a little bit about you for people who haven't heard you on
sure.
before. You're originally from California?
No, originally I'm from the Washington, D.C. area. Maryland, I should say.
Oh, okay. The same origins as Tori. And
yes,
I think we mentioned
right.
that, right?
That's right. We connected over that.
So Maryland, what was it like growing up there? I mean, did you feel the influence of politics there, or was
yes,
it,
you did? Yeah, D.C. is a very political town, and my dad was in politics, so it was sort of everywhere, and everyone's involved in it, and everyone knows about it, and it's sort of, it was a cool upbringing, because all, even kids, because your parents are so invested, we all had opinions, which were mainly just our parents' opinions, but for a while. But yeah. But yeah, it was a very political town. It was very heavily, that was heavily the conversation that we would have, and certainly in my house. We grew up mostly overseas, however. We spent all of our time that we spent in the U.S., we spent in D.C. Because
okay.
it's the capital, but then we moved around. We lived in France for 4 years and Chile for 3.
Wow, very cool. So you lived all over the place, right?
All over.
Did you pick up the languages, like French and
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, so I still speak fluent French and Spanish.
Wow.
Because my parents did not go easy on me. They just put me in the local French school, local Spanish school. And even when we came back to the States, I was in the French International School.
Wow.
So
you sort of had to learn by yourself.
Yeah,
pretty much what's
much.
Going on.
Yeah, French was my first language because we moved there when I was so young. And I learned. I actually have never formally been taught to speak English. I just speak English because we spoke it at home.
Wow!
But yeah.
How interesting.
Yeah.
Very cool. So you have like a pretty interesting upbringing and past because you lived in different cultures and
yeah.
things like that. So that makes it easier for you to get along with people. I figure from
yeah,
all over. Right?
I think so. I have a pretty easy time. Meeting new people and making friends, but I happen to also be an actor, so yeah. I am an extrovert, and I mean it's like everything sort of points to being a social person.
That's true, right? But you gotta be, I think we become more tolerant when we travel, we see other
you're
cultures
right.
and stuff,
you're right.
right?
You're absolutely right.
We're not as judgmental, you know?
Yeah.
Because you realize that people are different, and it doesn't mean they're better or worse, they're
yeah.
just different from us, you
right.
know? And they
you
live differently.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You stop being scared of what's different, because so often people just fear what's different and so judge it and don't want to be around it and because
right.
they just don't want to take the time, or it's not a rational thing, it's just sort of an innate fear of the unknown.
Right.
But you kind of stop having that fear, or have it less, when you've been exposed to so many different, everything's different.
Yeah.
You know, every 3 years it was a different place and different people. And
wow.
so if
but that's
fear,
hard to build friendships and stuff like that, right?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Especially when I didn't speak the language, because
yeah.
there wasn't much to talk about.
Oh, God.
So until it was very much sink or swim, because I didn't know the language until I learned it.
Yeah.
Luckily I learned them quickly because I was young.
Young too. Yeah.
Which helped. But yeah, no, I mean, it's hard to make friends, especially, you know, we moved to Chile when I was in middle school, which is an awkward looking phase,
right.
and I didn't speak Spanish, and I didn't know my name meant shrimp in Spanish. I had all these counts against me, but I still had, but it was positive, because they had never really seen like a blonde person before, I or like someone who spoke English, like that was exotic to them, and
yeah.
So you know, it was fine. I made friends very easily, and I some of my best friends are back there. So
yeah,
they're very sweet.
You see, that's what, and we talked about it before. When you're young, you don't really want to stand out. You want to blend in with everybody,
yes.
right?
And then it's the total opposite.
Total
when
opposite.
You're an adult.
Exactly.
Yeah. And
you know?
Find that what makes you different is what makes you exciting and special.
Exactly. You don't want to be like everybody else.
I know.
You know?
If we only knew that as a kid,
I know.
Could have embraced so much more of it.
I know, but instead we get bullied and stuff when we're different from other kids and stuff,
yeah.
you know, and it's just not easy for a lot of people. I know, you know, I moved around a lot, even within the same country. I mean, the town next door, even, so it wasn't a big deal, but still,
yeah.
you had to have new friends. You know, there was
yeah.
no cell phones, no, none of this stuff, so it was still like a distance when you moved away.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, I can imagine.
So, yeah, so to come to a new school, have to meet new friends, make new friends
yeah.
and stuff is not easy.
And I think it honestly might be a little harder for guys. My brother moved around, obviously, since I did too. And it's a I feel like girls have a little more courage to go up to another girl and say, hey, can I sit with you? Or I don't
it's
know.
True.
It's a little less embarrassing. There's something maybe, I don't know, you can speak more to it,
right,
but
right.
maybe emasculating to have to admit that you don't know anyone, or to have to admit that you don't have friends, or try to pick a group of guy friends that you want to enter. You know, I feel like girls are maybe a little better about being welcoming and also approaching.
Right. You know? I wonder if girls at that age are not as competitive, or maybe they're even more competitive than boys. I don't know. But I think what you're saying is also true when boys are sort of like competitive with each other, you know, like how males are usually. So maybe that has something to do with it. But you're right. You know, it's not easy to make friends. When you're a kid, you live in new places. And if you're not that outgoing, you know, I mean, you've got a problem.
Yeah. I know. Exactly. You've got an uphill battle.
Yeah. But that's cool. All that ends good is good, right?
Yeah, so, all that ends well.
So you ended up back here. And so how did you choose Southern California?
Well, because I'm an actress, so that was really not much of a choice. And I could have gone to New York, I suppose, but I was really more interested in film and television than I was theater.
Like theater and things like that, right?
Yeah, and also I grew up on the East Coast, so I just kind of wanted to change. And I'd always sort of dreamt of Hollywood, and it was so romantic to me to move to L.A. and become a star. And me and 1,000,000,000 other people. But
isn't that true, though? I mean, everybody moves here for the same reason.
Yeah. Did you move here for that reason?
No, I did not. I've been here. No, I've been here since I was in my teens. It was it was never a dream to act. I always wanted to be an entertainer, maybe a singer or something. But but I ended up here. So there you go.
This is a close second.
Yeah, there you go. I'm happy where I am, you know. But so, yeah, a lot of people do come out here for Hollywood and all that stuff. But what they don't realize is that millions of other people, like you said, are doing the same thing.
Gosh, it's so
funny. Trying to get the same few jobs. And it doesn't work like that, you know. So you have to understand also that acting means you take small roles. You're not going to be like a Tom Cruise the first time around.
Right. No, it does you a huge disservice if you think you can come out here and just instantly. I mean, luckily, my parents were realistic with me about what this meant and sort of explained.
What to expect.
Right, because you wouldn't know. You would think acting is a career like, you know, any other, like the ones your parents had, and, you know, doctor, lawyer, whatever. You just sort of work hard, pursue it, and then it eventually happens because you've gone through the right schooling and you did this, you know, you put in the work and then you get to be that job.
Right.
And acting is kind of different in that way. You can do all the work and never get the job. It's so random. And my mom said to me, you know, it takes about 10 years, but like from the time you start to the time you've, you know, broken into the business, it takes about 10 years.
Wow.
She told me that when I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I think knowing that the whole time and still wanting to pursue it, you know, sort of meant that I at least should give it a shot.
Right.
And I have no illusion about how fast, you know, or quick success this will be.
Right. So what path are you taking? I mean, are you able to, do you pursue like roles, anything that comes along? Do you have anything specific
to go after? Well, so right now I can't be, it's very choosy. I beggars can't be choosers, as they say, but I have had the good fortune to have a number of really great roles. Most recently, I just booked a guest star on a YouTube Red show that I just shot and called The Studio. And it's a super, super funny script, really, really funny concept and super funny writers. It's produced by ADD, All Deaf Digital. It's Russell Simmons' company, I'm pretty sure. And anyway, it's this hysterical script about this music label and sort of the ins and outs day in, day out of what they go through at the label.
Right.
And I play this white, no talent girl pursuing like tone deaf girl pursuing this act singing career, and I think I'm just the next, you know, Taylor Swift, but I can't hold a tune.
Oh wow, that's funny.
It's very funny.
Do you sing normally?
I mean,
naturally?
Yeah, I'm trained in singing. I mean, I would never.
But you had to pretend you can't sing on the show, right?
But I've gotta belt it like I just have never belted before. And it's so funny. Then the song is hysterical, and I'm singing about soul food and sweet potato pie right between my thighs.
That's one
of the lines.
Really?
Oh, it's a classy affair.
but it's
so fun. It's so fun to play those characters, you know.
Yeah.
And typically I would be terrified, petrified to sing for any project, and in this case, I have to sing poorly, so there's really no pressure.
No, not at all, right?
Yeah.
But you just I would bet it's hard to sing badly on command.
It takes more practice than you would think. You would think you'd just get out there and just suck. But I actually practiced for a long time to be as bad as I was. So yeah, I hope people notice that a lot of work went into how...
There you go. If it's bad, then you know she's doing her job.
Yeah, then I've done... If it's ear piercing, then I've done my job. but you're right. It is harder than people think. There's actually, I think, more preparation to do to make it bad and make it seem like my character thinks I'm really killing it.
Right.
It's good, you know? Because it wouldn't be funny if I also thought it was bad. It's funny because... I'm desperately finding myself a great singer, and I obviously am not.
I see. Okay, well. All right, well, we do have a phone-in guest, and she's calling in right now, so let's go ahead and take the call. We're going to be joined by Patty Grimm. Patty, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. How are you doing, Sam?
We're doing very well. I'm here with Cameron today. And
hi, Patty.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. Patty, where are you calling us from this morning? Where in the country are you?
I'm calling you from beautiful Laguna Niguel, California, where it's a little overcast today.
Laguna Niguel, California. Wow, that sounds pretty beautiful to me. I don't think I've ever been. Is that like in Orange County or something?
It's South Orange County, so we're in between Laguna Beach and Dana Point, San Clemente area. So it's a beautiful area.
Yeah, you sure know how to live, let me tell you, Patty. You sure know how to live. Yeah. Where did you grow up? Did you grow up in Southern California, too?
Most of my life I grew up in Southern California. I was technically born in Wheeling West, by God, Virginia. And when you drive in and out of town, it says, "Welcome to Wheeling West, by God, Virginia."
Oh, my God.
But I moved to California when I was quite young, lived here most of my life. Spent about 20 years in Seattle because I worked for Microsoft for about 15 years.
Oh, my God.
Came back to California as soon as I tried to semi-retire from Microsoft. So once they get their hooks into you, it's kind of hard to get away.
Yeah.
I see. And then once you're in California, it's hard to get away too, right?
Yeah, literally. We moved down here right after I decided to retire. We moved back and we never looked back.
Very cool.
In paradise.
Yeah. What did you do for Microsoft at the time?
I was a part of their worldwide enterprise sales team, so I headed up enterprise customer centricity, they called it. I headed up sales management, sales leadership, a whole number of things, different areas. And I actually had the opportunity to move to Singapore for 3 years, which was an amazing experience. We felt like we were on our honeymoon again because we had our kids were off in college. We lived in Singapore. If we wanted to go to Phuket, Thailand for the weekend, it was like flying to San Francisco from Southern California. It was an hour flight, super cheap, amazing experience, and I got to travel all over Asia. So that was a great experience and those kind of things. But kind of my passion right now and what I've been doing for the last 4 years is really doing research and writing a book. I wrote a book called Quiet Women Never Change History, Be Strong, Stand Up, Stand Out, with the subtitle of Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
You have to be careful how you say that. I love that. Let's go kick some
glass, like glass ceiling and stuff, right?
Kicking the glass ceiling, yeah. And I have my own radio show on Orange County Talk Radio called Women Kicking Glass. So I started the second book. I'm really focused on what can we do to help empower women, because people don't know this, and it's really interesting once you start to dig into the facts that women's pay has only gone up 1% in the last decade.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
It will take women between 111 and 179 years to get the pay equality if we keep doing what we're doing.
Really?
My goal is to inspire women to become self-empowered women leaders, and I have five things I say that they can do to be an empowered woman leader. And I'm really doing speeches and presentations, and my show is dedicated to helping women about wealth management, their careers, social issues like human trafficking, which I've got a guest on June 2nd talking about human trafficking, which is the second largest crime in the U.S., not overseas, in the U.S. to drug trafficking.
Wow. That is shocking.
Yeah.
It's really shocking. And currently right now, women earn 80 cents on the dollars compared to a man doing the same job. But it's also worse for African-American women who earn 67 cents and Hispanic women who earn 53 cents as compared to a dollar. So imagine that you're working at 50, and you know, 47% of your pay is going to somebody else.
Right.
And it doesn't just impact women, it impacts their children. It impacts women's buying power, which impacts our economy. So it's not just a women issue. And there's very concrete things women can do that don't take a ton of time and money. They take a little bit of guts and courage. But they're things that anybody can do.
Right. You know, I'm surprised, though, that I would think, you know, in many big companies, at least by now, they would have taken care of this pay gap, wouldn't you say? I mean, how can people in a big corporation actually justify paying somebody less for doing the same work and it's accepted?
Well, it's interesting. There was it is true, and it's very shocking, and there's some things people can check out really easily. There's a movie called 50-50 that people can watch for free, or you can even look at actress Patricia Arquette, look at her Equal versus Equal fight. That really tells the story. There is the big gap. I mean, we thought we solved the pay gap when we marched in the 70s, 80s, and 90s for women's rights and we burned our bras. And we thought we solved sexual harassment, but obviously sexual harassment is as big as ever, and the pay gap is still there. And so some things that women can do, and organizations need to help too. We need to start promoting women based on potential and not just performance. So the research mm-hmm. shows that men more often than not are promoted on potential. You hear, he's got the potential to be a great leader. Well, women don't get promoted until they perform and they prove themselves. Mm. And then people like myself who got to a certain career level and proved ourselves at that level, then we had to prove ourselves again to get to the next level.
So it's taking longer.
You know, looking at those kinds of things and really figuring out how do men, and what do we do to change this, you know, 179 years of pay equality?
Wow. So I mean, and there's a lot of movement and organizations to remedy that, right?
There are a lot of big companies have diversity inclusion initiatives and special things for women, and that's one of the things I do is companies hire me, and I can go in and do workshops and webinars for their women. And help move that needle a little bit faster.
Yeah, very interesting.
But there are things that women can do, and so kind of the five things I'll highlight mm-hmm. quickly. The number one first is be strong. So know what your strengths are. People can go online and they can take a DISC, a D-I-S-C, or any of those personal style instruments we took in college, or personality, to find out what your strengths are, because you want to play to your strengths. If you try to improve your weaknesses, you're only going to improve at incremental levels, and you maybe might get the average at best.
Right.
But if you focus on your strengths, you'll improve by quantum leap. So the first thing that women need to do is know what their strengths are.
Right.
The second thing is to stand up. But in order to stand up, you need something to stand on. So
right.
women need to literally write out a personal leadership vision for themselves. And I tell women to pick their favorite place. You know, mine's the beach because I live here. But, you know, go to the forest, your garden, your favorite place, and take a piece of paper and a notebook. And imagine a TV show or your favorite magazine is going to write a story about you in 5 years. What do you want that story to say about you? And craft that into your personal leadership vision that becomes a short statement of about 12 words or less that you use to make career and life decisions. And so my personal vision and why I do what I do is to make a difference and empower people to be the best that they can be.
Right.
And so the jobs, when I chose to go to Asia for Microsoft, I could have also gone to Europe and run the Central Eastern Europe Business Excellence Team. But being true to my vision, I picked Asia Pacific because they had less resources and less people, and I had more of a chance to make an opportunity. And so that's how I made that career choice. The next thing women need to do is really be able to stand out. This is where we need to be more valuable about our skills. We need to be more visible, and we need to be more vocal. And women need to stop saying, I'm sorry, or apologizing. A woman bumps into somebody, and she'll say she's sorry, even if it's not her fault. Mm-hmm. When we say we're sorry, we're kind of diminishing our own power. But if we can be more visible and vocal and say, I did this, men who work in the leadership group will say, I did this, or I did this project, where women will say, my team.
Mm.
So I encourage women, if it's too hard to say, I did this, to say maybe my team and I did this.
Right.
Okay.
That makes sense, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. super practical things. And number four is put yourself number one on your things to do list. We tend to put everybody above ourselves, our development, our time, our energy. Women are the caretakers of the world, and we do need to take care of other people. But just like on the airplane, when the flight attendant tells you to put your mask on first, mm-hmm. if you don't take care of yourself, you don't have the energy to take care of your kids, your family, or your team.
Yeah.
Somebody once told me, you can't give away what you don't own. So if you don't own your self-esteem and self-confidence, you can't give that to your kids.
That's true, right. Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of things you really need to think about. That was four. Was there one more thing that you...
There's one more thing, and this is Pay It Forward. So okay. Madeleine Albright, one of my favorite quotes, Madeleine Albright, former Secretary of State, said, there should be a special place in hell for women who don't help other women succeed.
Mm.
Right? So women need to be mentors. If you're a baby boomer, you need to be mentoring the Gen Xers and the millennials. If you're a Gen Xer, you need to mentor millennials. If you're millennials, volunteer at a school and help middle school and high school girls become strong women.
Right.
So we need to pay that forward and help other women grow and be strong. A friend of mine wrote a book called What Women Do to Sabotage Their Career According to Men. She interviewed over 500 men, and the number one thing men say women do to sabotage their careers is compete against each other instead of collaborating.
Oh.
So we need ladies out there, and we need to stop competing with each other. We need to reach down, pay it forward, and help someone else.
That's true. You got to stick together.
And the final thing is really raising brave girls. Right? As much as we have progressive parents, the girls are playing soccer and football and archery and they're doing all these wonderful things, we still are raising girls to be more perfectionist than brave risk takers.
Right.
And the example I use is if you watch kids play soccer, my sister has three kids, so I go to a lot of soccer games nowadays. Even though we're a football family, I now watch soccer games. And when little boys go play soccer, it doesn't matter if their shoes match, their clothes don't match, their hair's not combed, and sometimes they haven't even brushed their teeth. Mm-hmm. But the little girl goes to play soccer, and she's got to be dressed in a perfect outfit with a little ribbon that matches the team. And the little girl falls down, and we go, oh, Sarah, are you okay? The little boy falls down, and we go, Johnny, get up, you're not hurt.
So
we treat them differently,
As little as that seems, is that what happens when you're raised to be a perfectionist and always be perfect? In women, that leads to the imposter syndrome. Like, somebody's going to find out I'm not this good.
Mm.
I suffered from it, right? I would think, oh, my God, someday somebody's going to find out that I'm not this good.
Yeah.
Well, damn it, I am this good, right? And so is every woman out there. And so that also leads to, procrastination and self-confidence. So, how we raise our girls and boys, can impact them later in their career and life. And so that's kind of my message, and I do speeches and presentations and workshops, and I've started my second book. And that's me, and that's what I do, and that's my passion.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Really great.
So give us the name of the book again so people can look it up and get it if they want.
It's on Amazon. It's called Quiet Women Never Change History. Be Strong, Stand Up, Stand Out. And the subtitle is Let's Go Kick Some Glass.
Wow.
Or sometimes you just need to kick some ass.
Yeah.
And that's not the subtitle.
There you go. That's a long title, but it definitely explains what you can expect in the book, So
yeah,
there you go.
And people can listen to my radio show on OC Talk Radio Friday mornings at 10.
Okay.
It's called Women Kicking Glass. And then all my recorded pod beans are on my Women Kicking Glass 2 Facebook page.
Sounds good. So, and then you can be found. Do you have a website or do you want to give a social media handle?
Yeah, so the best way that people get in touch with me right now, my website is currently being updated. They can find me on LinkedIn. It's Patty Grimm, PattieGrimm. And they can email me to PattyGrimm@live.com. So that's PattieGrimm. @live.com, and they can listen to my radio show every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific time on OC Talk Radio.
Sounds good. Patty, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Everybody go out, get the book, find out what's going on, and Much more success to you, Patty. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, and let's go kick some glass.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Thanks so much, Patty.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's kick some glass.
Let's kick some glass.
Yeah.
I loved her. I wrote all that down. I was writing it in my notes. Although the biggest takeaway that I took from it was that she has a live account, which is what I have. Which I know is not the
people
point of that.
People still have live accounts.
And so it, I think, because I used to have a Hotmail account, and it somehow switched to a live account,
right.
And I know zero other humans with a live account.
Yeah. I know, I have Hotmail. I don't know that many people that still have that.
Yeah, that's what I used to have, and I almost said to her that we share a live account, but I thought it sounded a little off topic, considering what we were just talking about. But she made some really good points. That's so interesting. I had no idea that the gap was still that huge.
Right.
And to your point, how are we getting away with that? How is anybody getting away with that? It seems so obvious.
I know. And the thing is that, people get away with it because you can't really... tell people how to run their businesses, you know. You figure, okay, if he doesn't pay well the employees, they're just going to leave, you know, if you don't treat them well. But at the same time, you know, I like, for example, with me, I never think of, like, if I hire a woman, I can pay her less. It never even crosses my mind, you know.
Right.
So I but I guess it's just built into some corporate cultures or something, you know.
Right. And it's a shame, too, because one of her other points was that we need to help fellow women helping women supporting each other and pushing each other up. But maybe there wouldn't be so much competition between women if we were all paid what we were owed. You're creating a lack of payment so that there are fewer jobs, fewer opportunities for us to get paid. Of course we're going to be competitive with each other because there are fewer opportunities and that we all need to eat and feed our families. So maybe if we were all paid equally, then we wouldn't be so competitive with each other and you know, step on each other to get...
Probably, yeah. But, you know, there's always, like, the flip side of things and stuff. So it can always, like, you fix one thing, the other one breaks down, you know. So if you force businesses to pay the same, then that's going to raise prices and people are going to lose jobs and things like that. So I'm a capitalist, you know, so I don't believe in making rules for businesses as many as needed, you know, only as many as needed.
Right.
But at the same time, I do agree that at this point in time, there's absolutely no justification for paying women less, you know.
Yeah.
Makes no sense.
It makes
no
sense.
So it's from the past.
I know that a lot of women actors, I only know that because this is my field, but have started demanding the same pay as their male co-stars.
Right.
Like Robin Wright in, I don't know if you watch House of Cards.
No, I never watched it.
But it's a great show. It's on Netflix. And it's Robin Wright and, what's his name? Kevin something.
Yeah, Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey.
Right.
And she demanded equal pay for both of them because they are. They are very much, if you would watch the show, they're very much neck and neck for who is the main character. I mean, I would be hard-pressed to say that it was just him. It's really both of them.
Yeah.
So, and I think they agreed, and they matched the price.
That's awesome. You were talking about Netflix. I wanted to bring this up. Have you seen The Black Mirror at all? Did you watch any episodes?
No, I haven't seen it.
It's really cool because it's a lot like The Twilight Zone that used to be
very
popular.
That's what I hear.
So I watched one, and I told Tori, I said, it really, like, disturbed me. I didn't really like it. It was a British version because first it started in England, then they brought it here, and they made American episodes.
Okay.
So the first one was disturbing to me, but then I thought I'd watch an American episode. So this one was with Bryce Howard, the daughter of Ron Howard, you know, the redheaded.
Right.
The redhead. So... And this one is about everybody's walking around with their phones, looking at their phones, and everybody's rating everybody else. So, like, you give stars, you know, like when you go on Uber and things like
or
this.
Or like a Yelp review. Rate,
yeah.
Oh.
So people, like, constantly, so everybody can know your reputation between 0 and 5. So between 0 and 5 stars. So it's like if I see you in the elevator, I can see exactly what your reputation is, and then I can rate you, either lower it or increase it. And imagine what's going on. Everybody's like obsessed with this. And when people have like less than four, it's like they're castaways and shit like that. Nobody would even talk to them.
Oh my gosh, that is really
so. You always try to. You have to try and be nice to everybody, right?
Is it supposed to be like a futuristic
dystopian? Yeah, everything is for. Yeah, everything okay. here is futuristic, but it's always commentary on what we do. And both of the ones I've watched had to do with cell phones, you know.
Really,
but who knows where we're going with that? But people are thinking outside the box as far as to where this is going to go.
That's
you know?
So interesting because in our culture, we are rating everything.
Right. I mean,
you don't go to a restaurant without looking at
swipe right, swipe left. We do this to people.
Exactly. It's already happening with people. We're already rating them on a system, on a scale. You
exactly.
know?
Except it's not public.
Except
but here,
it's not public,
they were showing it how it's public, and people are like, so she gets pissed at the airport, right? Her, you see how her points start going down. Everybody's like rating her less.
Rating her less.
Right. Then she starts profanity. So she's like, security, please. There's profanity here. He comes in. He lowers her a whole point.
Oh,
and she's like devastated.
My gosh. You know where I think I'd lose my points? On the road in L.A.
Yeah,
in
right?
In my car. I think I'd get a lot of deductions from that.
But you know,
and I'd probably give them out too. I get so angry on the road. It's everybody's such a bad job. I would happily send someone a one star because I get so aggravated. But that's so that's so interesting because so what's the ultimate conclusion of the episode?
I haven't seen the end of it yet.
Oh, you haven't seen it.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but it's probably just going to be like a lesson, you know. I know there's going to be a twist in the end, there usually is. But I don't know how it's going to end, but it's pretty interesting to look at that. And
it
all
is.
This stuff is scary because, you know, it could happen, you know? I mean, we're already doing this. It's just imagine if you're like swiping right and left on people and it affected them.
I know.
In a way, you
know. And if they found out.
So everybody's wearing the reputation on their sleeves.
And already we have it in a sort of indirect way because people post stuff on Instagram or on Facebook and either you get a lot of likes
or you don't.
And it's very much... it's not even near representative, you know, how much people like you.
Exactly.
But it feels that way. It certainly feels like, oh, okay, well, no, I got, you know, not so many likes on this. I guess nobody likes me anymore. You know, it's hard to not get your feelings hurt, even though it's this virtual weird
Instagram.
Yeah,
and people live and die by those numbers.
But yes, they do. And people make careers on those numbers. And people depend on those numbers I personally know people who depend on those numbers to... sort of weigh their worth.
Wow.
And it's becoming because
it's
a lot
sad.
Of them because a lot of them are either jokes, they're, you know, like supposed to be funny, and if they're not getting a lot of likes then that's a, you know, it's like a direct hit on that. Or it's their looks. They're posting, you know, and the Instagram model has become this like legitimate thing, and that pays. It's like a paying job to be an Instagram model. And so if you're posting something revealing, that's kind of intimate, you know, me in a bathing suit or something, and it doesn't get a lot of likes, that's sort of like a gut punch.
Exactly. So that's why they get a lot of, I mean, you're guaranteed, you put on a bikini, go on Instagram, you're going to get a lot of likes, you know.
Yeah, well, hopefully.
It just seems to happen. You know.
I know.
But it's like, I mean, but what's the point of liking a picture like that anyway, though? You know, I mean. Are these guys hoping to be noticed?
I'm hoping she'll reach out.
Yeah, or something, you know? I mean,
I don't know.
Would you even like pictures like that? And what really pisses me off is that when those women in bikinis start giving you like inspirational quotes and things like that, right?
Just the funniest
is that like,
thing.
Yeah, it's like beauty is on the inside. It's like, and you're showing your boobs here.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I know. I really can't stand that when it's an obvious, you know, hot selfie or a hot pic, all these yoga girls stretching, and the caption is some inspirational thing.
That
some
has
Socrates
nothing to do with it.
Quote that just has nothing to do with the
exactly.
picture.
Exactly. I mean, here you're showing your tits to everybody, and now you're talking to me about inspirational stuff.
It
doesn't work like that.
Suddenly, exactly. Showing your tits and... talking about the golden rule, it just doesn't. It seems phony to me, but but it's funny because that exact thing that you were talking about, the direct correlation from your rating to your worth, is actually already happening in the sense that for acting, at least just in my field, I've lost parts to influencers. They're called. So basically, someone who is, let's call it, rated higher on Instagram, who has a, you know, a large following, sometimes is given parts over actors, or I won't even be called in for stuff, or because they only want over this many followers. They're looking for someone with a big following.
Right.
So sometimes I'm not even eligible to audition for things. And there, in one instance, I legitimately had a role that was given to someone else with a higher,
really?
Higher,
wow.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Rating, I guess, life rating, if you want to call it that. But
yeah, but you know, it's like so. I can tell you from seeing it from the other side that it doesn't matter how many followers people have. That only works in the social media. You know, once you get like, I mean, we've had guests here with hundreds of thousands of followers. I don't see it in the listenership, you know. They don't necessarily follow you everywhere you go. They're just going to like your posts and things like that.
It
doesn't mean they're going to follow you everywhere you go.
That's
and that they're crazy about you, you know.
Yeah.
That's what
or that they're even going to watch that movie that, you know, they put you in. They might just like your Instagram platform, and
exactly,
that might be the only thing that they want to follow of yours.
And right, and what I'm saying is they think it's going to bring them an audience and advertising or whatever, and it usually doesn't, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, the people just like, for example, if I, like, I would imagine a lot of these bikini girls get a lot of likes just, you know, from a brief look at the picture, you go like and you follow her or
something,
right?
Exactly.
But the thing is, you don't know her, you don't know anything about her, and you don't care if she's going to be on the radio or in the movie or anything.
Right.
You know,
that's
so
true. That's
so
true.
How important really are those followers? I don't know. For some people it works. Look, I mean, and I was talking about this guy that gets like 9 million views every time he puts on a video of himself imitating a southern mama. That's what he does. 9 million views. I mean, what is this, you know?
A southern mama.
Yeah, you know, and he just kind of talks like her. He doesn't dress like anything or anything like that. You know, he just does a character. And I can't believe how many followers he's got. And I'm thinking, how do you really monetize that? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it must be advertisements.
Yeah. But when you see it on Facebook, there's no advertising to it, you know. So all you can do is hope to build your audience and hope that that would somehow pay for itself or something. But the internet, the currency of the internet is traffic. You know, if you got the traffic, then you're good. You know, if you don't have it, nobody knows you exist.
Yeah.
You know.
I know.
Yeah. So I'm seeing here, I guess the LAPD nabbed about 40 plus members of MS-13, which is a gang here in LA. So these guys look mean, and they raided them in a few locations, and more than half of the people, okay, get this, more than half of the 44 people arrested were undocumented immigrants. All right?
Really?
So they come here to cause trouble. Right? I don't know what, you know, but yeah, let's clean up our streets a little bit, you know what I mean? The people that suffer the most are the people in those inner city areas, you know, where you just, it's just a drive-by shooting or something, you know? You just get killed for just being at the wrong place at the wrong time, you know?
It's hard to know. I've never, obviously I wasn't raised in that area, but I think it's got to be something like, it's what everyone around you is doing, so you almost don't have
a choice.
It's not like these kids necessarily sought this out or were hoping to end up here or even had this like terrible, you know, bad blood that they just, you know, this anger or something that they had to deal with. I don't know. I have to believe that some of it is just wrong place, wrong time, and you know, you follow your older brother's lead, or you know, some mentor in your town, you know, led you to this, and then you sort of got caught up in the wrong thing. But
I know, and that's, I think what happens is they don't have a good upbringing at home. Maybe the parents are not there or whatever.
Right.
And and young people need to feel they belong to something, like we said, you know.
Right.
And,
right.
And the thing is that a gang sometimes is a very attractive option for these guys that don't know where to go and what to do with their lives, you know.
Yeah.
But that's sad, because then they end up in prison and nothing good ever comes out of that.
No.
You know? Wow.
When did that happen? When was
Yesterday, they did the raid. 1,000 officers were involved in the raids. 40 raids.
God.
Wow. Yeah, they decided to really take them down.
That's crazy. How does that? So how does something like that happen? Because, I mean, obviously, these guys are not hiding.
Right.
I mean, what were they having a meeting or some kind?
No, but that's the thing. It's different. It's different raids. So it means they just went to different houses.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I mean, if 44 people were arrested in 40 raids, it's probably one raid per person, almost, you know? So they would send like maybe 20 cops to capture one guy or something, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, God, they're all like totally tattooed. What kind of a life is that? I don't know.
That's
in a way, you have to feel bad for them, you know, for ending up like this. You don't.
I do.
You don't have to end up like that, you know.
Yeah. Shoot.
But you know. Let's see what else. So that's about it. I didn't really look at the news that much because other than politics, there's not much to look at, really.
I know, it's so overcome with politics. There's so much to talk about in politics that we've done away with all the other news.
I know. Yeah, we kind of let Tori take that with her for a few days, so we don't have to talk about Trump and all that stuff anymore.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Her expertise.
But they're already talking impeachment and everything, you know. So
I know. Well, I hope she's having a good time at her her vacation wedding. I'm actually going to a second wedding. My boyfriend is in the wedding. Similar thing. It's up in Seattle, where he's from.
Really?
Yeah. So this.
So what's a second wedding? Like they decided to marry again?
Oh no!
Again?
Just my second wedding that I've
ever been
to.
Oh, okay. That's
A second wedding. How funny. No, just because I've been to so few. I've only been to one, and the one that I've been to was like a few months ago. So I'm just starting to get into this whole wedding thing. And so, it's funny because I never really grew up, like, fantasizing about my wedding. Like, a lot of girls, I don't want to overgeneralize, but some, you know, they'll have, like, a Pinterest page of their dress and their, you know, ring and just everything that they want to have happen at their wedding. And I don't know. I never had that. I just never had that fantasy, I guess, of my wedding day. But the more and more I go to weddings, I'm like, oh, I get it. This thing is really fun. Everyone just gets drunk and dances. And
I know. You know what's interesting? You want to hear a quick interesting story. I mean, human nature. The other day, somebody posted on in one of the groups on Facebook. It's an Israeli group that's for the Israelis that live in LA.
Mm-hmm.
And someone posted saying, I'm at a wedding and not a lot of people showed up and the bride and groom are really bummed, right? So if somebody is willing to come down and share in the celebration and everything, right? Apparently so many people showed up after that post that it was like one of the best weddings ever, they said.
Oh my God.
Isn't that like incredible? You know, people just came and wanted to help out. Think of somebody's wedding day when nobody shows up, right?
Oh my gosh.
How terrible it is. So this turned out to be like such a happy story. And I'm like, wow, you know, you can count on people sometimes.
That is really, really nice.
It's the biggest day of your life, you know?
Yeah, that would make me sad.
So people would come out, yeah. And besides, it can't be all that bad. You're going for free food, free everything, you know?
Dancing, booze.
Exactly.
Meet some people.
Meet people, there you go.
Yeah, everyone gets laid on wedding night.
Yeah, there you go. So
that's so funny.
There you go.
Oh, what a nice story. But I'm sorry that their friends didn't go.
I know. What the hell is that about, right?
I feel like you would know who was coming and who wasn't coming because there's a whole RSVP thing.
Yeah, RSVP thing. And stuff, but maybe I don't know what happened. Who knows what happened?
Yeah, God, it's so expensive. That's the other thing. It's like buy a house or have a wedding because
exactly right.
It's this massive undertaking. I had no idea.
Yeah,
everything. I mean, down to your dress and the flowers and the venue and the ring and the, oh God, it's in the food.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
So much.
All right. Well, this is the show for today, Cameron. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. It was such fun.
Of course. Always a lot of fun. You'll be back in the next few days again.
Yes, I will.
Which is awesome. We want to thank Patty Grimm for calling in and check out her book, her website, her radio show. And we'll be back here tomorrow. So take care. See you tomorrow.
Ooh. You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.